We know there are certain laws that apply to physics and nature, but are there similar laws that apply to societies? This is one of the questions asked in Philip Ball's book, Critical Mass.
I think it does. I think there's very good evidence now to believe that it does. It seems hard to believe that laws that govern particles, atoms and molecules interacting with one another would have anything in common to do with the way humans behave. But the more we look statistically at patterns of human behaviour in society, in cultures, in institutions, the more we can start to see common signatures there that we could recognise from the way particles behave in the inanimate world. I think it sometimes helps to sort of take an intermediate step in making that connection. If we think about the animal world, so you've got living systems that can move under their own steam, if you like, but they do form collective modes of behaviour. The obvious ones are things like schools of fish, flocking of birds, where the individuals there are just interacting with their neighbours. There's nobody leading the group. But somehow, collectively, they organise themselves into these amazingly coherent patterns. If they can do that, it wouldn't be a great surprise to find that we do that as well, sometimes unconsciously. And I think there's clear evidence now that we do.
What sort of things do you think we do it in? Because I'd like to think of myself as an individual, really.
Well, many of the situations that we're in everyday life, we don't get a lot of opportunity to exert our individuality. I think this is the crucial thing. It's not saying that we don't have that potential, but if we think, for example, of driving down the road, you know, in theory, we can drive anywhere at whatever speed the vehicle is capable of. But we don't, of course, because we're concerned, first of all, to get to our destination on the right side of the road, and secondly, that we don't collide with one another. So we're incredibly constrained in that situation about what we can do. And in situations like that, where our choices are limited, then we often find that it's quite simple interactions between people that determines the overall group behaviour. So that in traffic, for example, we're interacting simply by looking at what the driver ahead is doing, and that can drive the whole of a traffic stream into a sort of collective kind of behaviour, which sometimes manifests itself as a jam you could sort of see as a kind of a collective freezing of an otherwise fluid traffic state.
Obviously, with the birds that are going together in their big flock or whatever, they all tend to be quite cohesive. And you don't seem to have the odd bird that goes, no, I'm going to fly the opposite way. But with humans, you do get that. So surely that kind of puts a bit of a spanner in the works, doesn't it?
Well, it can do. These sorts of behaviours generally are easiest to see when you've got more and more people, and that the average behaviour starts to dominate. Even in the case of particles of matter floating about in a gas, there is, in a sense, a kind of individuality in that, you know, they fluctuate, they behave randomly. There's not a predictability to it. But nevertheless, what really matters are the interactions between them that, once you have enough particles, tend to give rise to a sort of dominant mode of behaviour that's quite robust, even in the face of little individual fluctuations. And that's pretty much what happens in some of these social situations.
Now that we know that we do kind of follow these patterns and so on, can that be any use to us?
Well, it could certainly help us at a very simple level with traffic, for example. It could help us to design better road systems that are less likely to jam. It could help us to design better switching sequences for traffic lights, perhaps better rules of the road. It might even enable us to see what rules are safer for drivers, what rules constrain people to sort of behave sensibly, if you like. But more broadly, I think once we start to recognise that these sorts of behaviours exist, it gives us a more rational basis for making laws and for building institutions, that we can start to try to build them to fit the way that people naturally seem to behave en masse, rather than trying to do it the other way around and try to sort of squeeze mass behaviour into the way we think it ought to be.
Is this natural mass behaviour, though, really about the best way of doing things? Or because actually we kind of know the law's already there and it's going to come down a clamp on us if we don't behave in this way?
Yeah, no, it's really important to make that distinction between what does seem to happen and what we might want to happen. And I think we shouldn't ever see the existence of these sorts of natural laws of society as a kind of a moral imperative, as though to say, well, you know, it has to be this way. What we can do is to find out how much latitude we have have for tweaking things, so that we're not trying to do the impossible, so that we're not trying to create laws that are going to go against people's natural instincts. Really, I think this ought to be looked at as a tool that we need to decide for ourselves what kind of society we want to have. And these sorts of tools can help us to see what the parameters are, how much manoeuvrability we've got, if you like, in making those rules.
That's author Philip Ball.
Interviews from Passion for the Planet.
Copyright Passion for the Planet.
Listen to more interviews online.
Hear health, environment, lifestyle, personal growth and business experts when it suits you. This service is free. Register now at passionfortheplanet.com.
Find out more at passionfortheplanet.com.